word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. In the shadow of a bloody civil war, girls still show up for ballet class at the Cesar Sports Club in Sakhnaya, Syria. Photojournalist Emma LeBlanc lived in the leafy suburb, about 6 miles south of Damascus. She took classes there, too. In March of 2012, 1 year after the start of the Syrian uprising, she and her colleague Phil Sands started taking portraits of the students who practiced their pliés as the battle to bring down President Bashar al-Assad escalated around them. Emma, whose photos have appeared in GQ, Le Monde, and other publications, is a Rhodes Scholar this year. She's on break now, staying with her parents in Manchester. Her exhibition, The Ballet Girls, A Portrait of Life in Damascus During the Revolution, is on view at the Derryfield School until January 18th. Emma, so glad you could come in. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Give us a little backdrop on, please pronounce the town for me.
Sakhnaya.
Sakhnaya. Where these photographs were taken, where is it and who lives there?
So Sakhnaya is one of a bunch of fairly new suburbs in surrounding Damascus. Over the last 40 years, the city has grown a lot and the middle classes really can't afford to live downtown anymore. So you get a lot of doctors, engineers, lawyers, professionals choosing to live in these smaller towns that used to be farmlands, really, but now have all the convenience of being close to the city, but also, you know, similar to this country. They're a nicer place to raise a family. You have a lot of religious diversity in Sakhnaya. So it used to be traditionally Druze. There are a lot of Christians, a lot of Sunnis, Alawites there. And there's some class diversity as well. So alongside these middle class professionals, you also have shopkeepers, mechanics, and more recently, there are a fair number of refugees from the drought. So rural peasants now living on the outskirts of Sakhnaya as well.
So you describe it in the description for the exhibition as a bourgeois suburb. So are these the elites? Are these the pro-Assad defenders living there?
They aren't elites in terms of when we think about the regime and this close circle surrounding Assad, the people who, you know, fly to Paris for their summer shopping. They're sort of normal Syrians, or at least a standard of middle class life to which most Syrians aspire. I think probably most Syrians are probably poorer than the people in Sakhnaya, but they don't live extravagant lives, right? They probably own houses or apartments. Some may own cars. They have nice French kitchen appliances. They send their kids to basketball summer camps, that kind of thing. Although they do remain pretty pro-regime in some ways, because for them, the regime has lived up to its promises. They had a fair amount of opportunity, often through family connections or, you know, these religious sects, these minority religious sects tend to be centered around a few big families. And they've done okay in the past few decades.
And this town, this suburb, is very close to Daraya, if I'm saying that properly, sometimes called the cradle of the revolution and the site of a terribly bloody massacre in August. So what has happened in Sakhnaya since you took these photographs?
Right. So Sakhnaya is actually, it's a strange location in some ways because it's on the road between Damascus and Deraa, which was the first city to really rebel against Assad. And the next town over, and it's really just separated by an olive orchard, is Deraya, this town where the most significant massacre happened. And it's otherwise surrounded pretty much by rebel-held or rebel-sympathetic areas. And since these photographs were taken, Sakhnaya has become further isolated from the cities around it. So these towns that were not previously that dissimilar in terms of class, in terms of religion, are now increasingly defining themselves around their political position. So Deraya and Sakhnaya, which for me were really, I never distinguished much between them. You might have to file your housing papers for Sakhnaya in Deraya. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, they're drastically different places. And Deraya's, you know, mostly rebel-held. The government's just every day shelling it, bombing it. You sit in Sakhnaya, you can see this happening, you hear it. And Sakhnaya remains very pro-regime. They have checkpoints all over town, on either end of town, both army checkpoints and militia checkpoints to make sure the people from Deraya don't come over. So Sakhnaya is becoming sort of more extremely oriented one direction and Deraya the other way.
Mm-hmm. So in these photographs taken at the sports club in Sakhnaya, these lovely little girls in their crisp white tutus, you know, along these pink walls. One could look at them and think, oh, Syria's fine.
One could, and I think that's part of what the people of Sahnaya are trying to tell themselves, right? They continue to do things like send their kids to ballet practice because they want to believe. They want to believe that this revolution isn't happening, that their life savings aren't disappearing, that this violence isn't encroaching, which it is, right? So Sahnaya in the beginning really did remain pretty impervious to the violence. It was far away. It was in Dara, it was in Aleppo and Homs. And now that's less true. There are attacks on checkpoints within Sahnaya. There's a fair number of assassinations. You can hear shooting in Sahnaya itself at night. But ballet has really become this symbolic exercise in reminding themselves that everything's okay. And I think the other thing is just that in some ways, life can't always be all shelling and shooting all the time either, right? People do have to go about their daily lives. And so even places that are more centrally involved in the revolution than Sahnaya, people do continue to do things like go to sports practice or go shopping and have birthday parties.
Photojournalist Emma LeBlanc is with us. She's a Rhodes Scholar this year, visiting her family here in New Hampshire, and an exhibition of her portraits from Syria called The Ballet Girls, A Portrait of Life in Damascus During the Revolution, is on view at the Derryfield School until January the 18th. I guess I'm curious about who sends their kids to ballet school in Syria. Is this common, or is this kind of a Western affectation?
It's not common. I'm not sure if I would call it a Western affectation, but it's certainly a middle class pursuit. It's you have to have a certain amount of disposable income, which many Syrians do not. And something like ballet specifically, it's a way of showing a liberal Western idea about what is appropriate behavior for girls and women, right? That they can perform publicly is considered a pretty liberal view. And I think in Sahnaya specifically, it becomes a way of showing one's minority religious identity, right? This is something Christians do. And of course, there are Sunnis in the class as well, but it becomes this symbolic way of performing a minority religious identity.
Well, what role does that sectarian distinction play now? I mean, you've lived in Syria for more than 5 years. I've read a little bit about life there as a very pluralistic society, people of different ethnicities and religions living side by side. And, you know, now it's different. Is this something that the revolution has wrought?
Right. So one of the things that happened under the Assad regime was actually that it was really militantly secular. So people, Sunnis, Christians, they lived side by side. This is, you know, it's a cliche, but you really did see women walking down the street together, one in a miniskirt, the other with her face covered. And people never spoke about religion in Syria. It would take me months with friends to figure out what religion they were. You would never ask somebody. And that is no longer the case. As people tried to sort out the revolution, to try to figure out what side they're on, and it's hard because I think we want to put it into we want to put everyone in two groups. You're either pro-Assad or you're anti-Assad. You're pro-revolution, you're anti-revolution. And there's all this gray area, right? You may be tired of the corruption of the regime, but you don't know that you think violent revolution is the best way to go about achieving those reforms. People have really had to figure out how to organize around certain kinds of identities. And sectarianism has been one of them, largely because I think under the Assad regime, religious minorities did benefit, right? So there's this alliance between political identity and religious identity. And it's hard to distinguish, do you despise this other group because they're Alawite or because they profited under the regime under which you suffered?
There's so much concern now here, especially in the U.S. and those who've observed, you know, the different countries that experienced the Arab Spring going in their own paths. A lot of concern here about the rise of the Islamic fighters and of Al-Qaeda even getting a hold there in Syria. I wonder if you hold out any hope for a future sectarian state, for Syria to become again a secular society.
I do hold out that hope. I think it's really hard to know. And I think that the longer the revolution goes on, the longer there's this fight that's so divisive for the country, the more we have to fear, the more people are starting to think of themselves in sectarian terms. But I think most Syrians are moderate Muslims. They do not aspire to a Saudi-style state. They may want to see Islam incorporated in some ways into any future state, but they want to do so through democratic means. I still think to this day most Syrians are focused on democracy.
A rare firsthand view of Syria. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Virginia.
War correspondent, photographer, and currently a Rhodes Scholar, Emma LeBlanc. She and Phil Sands, Syria correspondent for Abu Dhabi's The National newspaper, collaborated on The Ballet Girls. That's a portrait of life in Damascus during the revolution. It's now on view at the Derryfield School and will be there until January 18th. Emma's going to be talking about the photos at a reception for the exhibition on Thursday evening. You can see selections from some of the photos on our Facebook page. Really worth looking at. That's Word of Mouth Radio. Now coming up, a radio field trip to a far less exotic or embattled location. It's a monster truck jam peeling into New Hampshire when Word of Mouth continues.